You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being here. Christina Long is in studio with me today. We're going to talk about Arkansas, Tennessee. We'll talk some more about what John Calipari had to say yesterday at his press conference previewing the start of the Razorbacks basketball practice. And then a little bit later in the show, Jimmy Hyams, who's a Tennessee media legend, he'll be with us to talk about the Tennessee Volunteers and that game Saturday night over at Razorback Stadium. Was listening to Josh Heupel earlier in the week, and it's kind of interesting just to listen to what different coaches have to say about different teams. And, you know, like there's never any – every team that they play is the best team. You know, I mean, it's like the compliments are flowing whenever you hear coaches talk about teams. Here's a little bit about what a little bit of what Josh Heupel had to say about Arkansas.
To get ready for Arkansas, first of all, I know it's going to be a great environment there. This is a really good football team. They're a couple of plays away from being undefeated. You look at the way that they played this past weekend. They're playing extremely physical on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Defensively, one of the best teams in the country defensively and offensively. They're rushing the football about as good as anybody, and they've created plays on special teams. So huge test for us this week to prepare the right way and get ready to go play our best football.
Josh Heupel, we'll have some more from him in a moment. We're going to take some time today and look through just head-to-head Arkansas and Tennessee coming out of our Hogs Illustrated magazine. Christina writes a head-to-head preview every week about the Razorbacks and the team that they're going to play. You know, I was telling you a little bit earlier, one of the things I like about Heupel is that he just looks like an everyman. You know what I mean? He just kind of looks like a guy that, I mean, you go pull him out of Section 23 in his hoodie and, you know, he just kind of looks like your everyday volunteer fan.
Yeah, and he talks like one too. He does not, you know, he kind of has that, I don't know, just kind of casual.
He's not polished.
No, and he doesn't, and it doesn't feel like he's ever BSing you. He's not, like you said, he's not polished, but he's not unprofessional. Mm-hmm. Like he's very casual, I would say, in a way that I kind of appreciate in a coach.
He's very succinct. I was watching his press conference. You know, Sam Pittman's Monday press conferences are usually like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like you're cutting people off. No, Bob, you can't ask any more questions.
Yeah.
His was 10 minutes.
That's crazy.
10 minutes in and out.
That's crazy.
Very succinct with his answers. And, you know, he moves on about his day. It was kind of interesting. Obviously, this game begins at quarterback. Arkansas with Taylen Green. Tennessee with Nico Iamaleava. He's having a great year for the Volunteers. And it's interesting. I was looking at a stat the other day. I can't remember where I saw this, maybe College Football Film Room, and they said that whenever Iamaleava is not pressured, I think he's like third or fourth nationally in yards per attempt. So like 11, almost 12 yards per attempt when they don't get pressure on him. It underscores how important it's going to be for Arkansas to get pressure on this quarterback on Saturday, and that's been a problem for Arkansas, getting pressure consistently this year. It improved some against Texas A&M, but consistently it hasn't been there.
Right. I think that whether they can get pressure on Iamaleava is something huge to watch in this game, especially because they had two tackles miss time with injuries. I think they'd had one out against Oklahoma. Tennessee's coming off a bye week. They had one hurt, missed the game against Oklahoma, and then I believe a second one got hurt during the game against Oklahoma, another starter. So we aren't sure of their status yet. We'll see on tonight's availability report and then how that kind of changes over the next few days, whether those guys are available. But that's something to watch. In this head-to-head story, one thing, kind of go behind the curtain a little bit, I had originally given the offensive line advantage to Arkansas, and I write these usually during the week before. So, like, right now, for example, I'm working on the LSU one, and then I finish it on Sundays, and I kind of update after I see the most recent game change things. And after I saw what we saw against Texas A&M, I changed the offensive line advantage to Tennessee because I just didn't have a ton of faith in Arkansas after what we saw against Texas A&M. But I do think you could easily make the argument that Tennessee without those two tackles is more of a question mark. So I think that'll definitely be something to watch as far as the Tennessee offensive line goes and how Arkansas is having better success defensively getting some of that pressure. We finally saw Landon Jackson break through and get his first couple sacks. That was huge for him. So we'll see how that goes, and I think that'll be really key. I mean, we've talked recently with a lot of Arkansas's opponents about having these young quarterbacks and things like that. And Iamaleava is one of the young quarterbacks who's really – he's really shined in, and I think they've put him in a great position to succeed.
You just roll through that name. Really? How many times have you practiced that?
I have been saying it. I've got it written out here.
I've got Maliava.
I've been writing it and reading it in my head for so long now, writing about Tennessee for about a week, that it lives in my brain now just from reading it.
These names, some of these quarterbacks, you know, like Uiagalelei at Florida State. I mean, these are hard names. I was like, he's got two consonants in his names. Everything else is vowels.
That's so funny.
That's a tough name to say.
Yeah, it's going to be one that everybody's going to have to learn, though, for sure.
Iamaliava. I'm getting there.
Watch us be saying it wrong. Like, watch us be totally saying it with full confidence and have it wrong.
How do you think an announcer would feel if they had Iamaliava and Uiagalelei in the same game?
You'd have to do some vocal warm-ups.
Maybe Tua Tagovailoa watching from the stands or something.
Yeah, I mean, people were alarmed by Tua's last name for a while. And then you get to a point. What's funny is all these quarterbacks, they're all guys that we talk about a lot. So you kind of have, you got to learn. You know,
they make you know their name.
Yeah,
you know,
for
it's like Tagovailoa. You had to learn that name really fast whenever he was in Alabama because they play so well.
Yeah.
Josh Heupel was talking about Talon Green earlier this week and the difficulties of defending against the Razorback quarterback.
Yeah.
Dynamic playmaker with the ball in his hands. That's quarterback design, quarterback runs. It's read game, which can be first or second level reads for him. It's when plays break down. He's got the ability to escape, outrun people, get outside of the pocket and make plays. And anytime you're facing a quarterback that's that dynamic, that is, you know, where the game starts for you defensively. You know, on pass plays, you got to push the pocket, but you can't let him escape. And the quarterback run game, you better have your eyes in the right place, play the play based off of what you're seeing the right way, and then be in a fundamental position to squeeze and go make a play.
So that's Heupel talking about Talon Green. Something he said there stands out to me, and it's basically that the code. Maybe he didn't mean it this way, but it's the way I took it, is that Green is best when he gets outside the pocket. And so the called plays for him are not necessarily the plays that are working. It's whenever he goes to improvising that Arkansas's having its offensive success. I thought it was certainly that way the other day against Texas A&M. Gets on the run, throws a 75-yard touchdown pass, and then they don't score a second touchdown unless they get the fake punt that aids that drive.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like their best play has been Talon runs around and finds Andrew Armstrong, and there he is, you know. And Andrew Armstrong, they're fortunate to have Andrew Armstrong, a guy who just everything seems to kind of stick to him. And they've started to get some more receivers in the mix. Tislaw kind of broke out. We'll see how many more looks he gets going forward, what he kind of earns there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's hard when he's under so much pressure and he's having to run around so much. And then there's also been the question of, is he bailing too early? Like, mm-hmm. Is he scrambling when he doesn't need to? And I think that's something that they've been working with him on and something that I think Petrino has probably been frustrated about. And I'm sure they're kind of looking at that about how do you know, because he's best when he's on the run, but at the same time, that's so risky and he's made risky throws that he hasn't executed. And so how do you kind of find that balance of he can be really good on the run or he can make the wrong choice?
One of our users on a message board made a great point. I had not thought to look this up. They said that they looked up his rushing attempts every year at Boise State and in Arkansas. In 2022, he played in 11 games and ran 81 times. In 2023, he played 13 games and ran 77 times. Through five games, he's already got 72 rushing attempts at Arkansas.
Wow.
And so, I mean, he is on pace, assuming he doesn't get hurt. And I think there's a real risk of injury anytime you get a quarterback on the run as much as he is. There's a real chance here that he's looking at doubling his number of rushing attempts from last year at Boise State.
Yeah, and I just feel like it's a combination of things. It could be a combination of decision-making and a lack of confidence. I mean, Coach Pittman talked about it the other day, that when he's having to run so much, when the protection isn't there, his confidence is hit. So as soon as he maybe feels like there's pressure, he's going to bail because it's bitten him so many times. And so I think it's a combination of so many factors. I think I wrote something the other day after what Coach Pittman talked about. He talked about a lot of different factors that are kind of hurting that protection, and they know what the problems are. They're trying to fix them. And I think whether or not they can is going to be the story of these next few games. And I just think there's so many contributing factors. You can't just say it's Talon you know, doing the wrong thing, or it's the offensive line can't block, or it's whatever. There's so much going on at all times that's contributing to it. And whether or not they can get that together and get that solved is, like I said, the story of these next few games.
DJ Williams, who does a great job, you know, former Razorback, watched his podcast the other day. You know, he kind of, I think he alluded to, it's a blocking issue. It's an issue of Green maybe, you know, locking onto one receiver, not getting the ball out in time on other cases. Just the timing of this offense seems off.
Yeah. Yeah,
That would be the word that I would use to describe the offense right now.
Right. And something Pittman pointed out is there's been snap issues. And we see it.
Yeah, a lot of them.
We see it a lot. You know, we notice it most, obviously, when it gets dropped. When fumble snap.
He said that whenever Nichols is trying to snap to the left, yes, the ball is trailing to the right.
Yes.
Right,
and so it. Green is having to take the extra second or half second or whatever to figure out where the ball is, catch it, readjust, figure out what's happening. So that's slowing him down too, and that's something that's been a problem. You know, it goes beyond just a fumbled snap. It's that affects your timing too. I think another thing that's gone kind of under the radar is when we've talked about the tight ends this season, we've talked about where is Luke Haas in the receiving game. But we haven't talked a ton about how the tight ends are affecting this blocking and this protection situation. And the tight ends are not healthy right now. Haas is dealing with a back thing. He's been playing through it. Andreas
that was
Poska,
bothering him at Oklahoma State.
Yeah,
when he scored that touchdown at Oklahoma State, he kind of pulled up.
Right, and then he did it again this past time. And this was the first time we'd actually kind of confirmed that and talked about it a little bit was this week with Pittman. And Andreas Poska, who's a guy they kind of brought in to be more of a blocker, he's been in concussion protocol. Pittman was not optimistic on Monday that he would be available this week, which I think would be his third game to miss. Ty Washington got a little bit banged up on a play against Texas A&M. We're not sure of his status yet. Don't know what that injury is. So, and when they're not, it was a problem we saw with the defense a few weeks ago, was when they can't fully go in practice, when guys are in no contact or they have to watch from the side or they're just doing indie or whatever, you don't get, it's totally different watching it or doing film or doing whatever than doing it on the practice field. And these guys aren't able to do it on the practice field. And I think you're seeing that come up and hurt them in protection as well. It's not just the offensive line.
And compare that to Tennessee, who's probably being very physical this week because they didn't have a game last week. While they were trying, you know, I mean, they didn't have a game. They're probably trying to lick their wounds a little bit from the first 4 weeks. It feels like an uphill climb for the Razorbacks this weekend. We'll see. Going through, continuing to go through this, running back is one that's really interesting because you got two of the better running backs in the league in this game, in Jaquindon Jackson and Dylan Sampson at Tennessee. After four games, Sampson was leading the SEC with 10 rushing touchdowns. I don't know if he's still leading or not. I haven't looked at the stats this week to confirm that. Jackson's right there. He's you know, had a great start to the season. But I think there's a little bit of concern about Jackson and his health going into this game.
Yeah, definitely. I gave the running back advantage to Tennessee. I kind of waffled about that one, too. Dylan Sampson is still leading with 10 rushing touchdowns, by the way. And I ended up giving it to Tennessee because, A, because of the health question and because of just general depth concerns with Arkansas now, because there's just kind of some guys banged up there. And then also the fact that not only does Tennessee have Dylan Sampson, but they have DeShaun Bishop, who's number 7 in the SEC in rushing. So they have two guys that you have to watch out for. And Arkansas has good running backs, but Jaquindon Jackson's the clear biggest threat. He is the clear leader. They are giving him the ball. Tennessee has two different guys that you kind of have to watch for, and they use them differently. Now, Sampson, far and away, more carries, more yards, et cetera. DeShaun Bishop, though, really does get in the mix a lot. And he does a lot with that. He's got 7.5 yards per carry. So those are two guys that you have to watch out for. And I think anytime you have a group that has two of the top 10 running backs in the SEC, you kind of have to give it to them. But I think, yeah, Jaquindon Jackson, he's been kind of on and off the field in multiple games, kind of dealing with some injury stuff, which I'm sure has been really frustrating for him. Mm-hmm. We saw them slow him down against Texas A&M. If Tennessee can do the same thing, you know, that's another thing we talked about with Pittman. Impacting the protection is the run game needing to be established for there to be a little bit less pressure on the line and on Green in the passing game. And so if Tennessee can stop it the way that Texas A&M did, and if Arkansas is dealing with some injury issues, then yeah, that's going to be a huge concern for them. The run game has been the most consistent part of their offense.
The availability report comes out tonight, and that's going to be really interesting to look at because there's a lot of guys on there for Arkansas where, you know, we just don't really know where they are at this point. Rodney Hill got banged up against Texas A&M. They do get Rashad DeBinion back this week. Pittman said earlier in the week that he's, you know, his indefinite suspension's over after one game, but he's barely played this year.
He's
he took three snaps or three carries in the opening game. You know, so you don't know how much you can you don't know how much you're able to rely on him, or at least we don't know how much they're able to rely on him right now. Running back's a very interesting it's an interesting position going into this game because Tennessee's healthy there. Arkansas obviously has some questions. Turning the page over to defense, I have thought all year that defense, everybody's focusing on the number of points that Tennessee's putting up, but to me, you keep looking at the margin of victory. You know, they beat North Carolina State by 41, and they won that game over, who was it, Kent State by 71, and they could have won that by 100 easily. Their defense is really, really good this year.
It really is, and something that I've been writing about with Tennessee is the one thing, and I think their defense is elite anyway, but they have not played a good offense yet. They have played all of their two power conference opponents, NC State and Oklahoma, outside of the top 100 in offensive efficiency. Nobody that's really pushing them. Arkansas will be, statistically anyway, the best offensive team that they've played as far as, you know, power conference competition on Tennessee's level. And I think it's only going to get more difficult for Tennessee. So I don't necessarily think that means that Tennessee does not have a good defense and they're actually fraudulent. I just think it will be interesting as the season goes on and as they get into the heart of their SEC schedule, how much this dominance holds up and what other teams do against them, teams with higher powered offenses. And I think Arkansas, I would not describe necessarily, I don't know, that's maybe biased because they do, Arkansas's offense has good some good statistics, but Arkansas is not going to be the best offense they face, right? No. But it's going to be the hardest they've had so far, and it will be a test for them.
Do you think it'll be harder in Oklahoma?
Different. Maybe harder. I don't think Oklahoma's offense is very good.
Well, they weren't very good that night.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have had their problems. They've had some issues on the offensive front that's affected them, and their quarterback play is different.
Arkansas.
They've got some problems on the offensive front, too. I think OU, with their problems up front, more are with injuries.
Yeah.
Like when they played Tennessee, their starting center had been out for 2.5 games, and it was his first game back. I think they were still without their right tackle. That game it was on the road, in a good environment. That game was probably a good a warning shot, I guess, if you will, that, hey, Tennessee can come in and they can really dominate you defensively and offensively. And that leads to this. Bob Holt wrote about this morning. Tennessee has a 78-3 scoring advantage in the first quarter of games this year. That's unbelievable. I mean, their games are pretty much over by halftime.
That's crazy. And that's something that Arkansas has talked about a lot this year.
149-6 in the first half.
Wow.
Yeah.
They've only given up
They've only given up 6 points in the first half this year. 149-6. I mean, their games literally have been over at halftime.
That's insane. And it's something we've talked about with Arkansas is the need to start fast. They've talked about that since fall camp. And if Tennessee makes it that hard, how difficult is it going to be for, if Arkansas gets in a hole, for them to crawl back out of it? I don't know. I think we've seen kind of both sides of that. We saw them come back against UAB. We've seen them not come back. We've seen them get a lead and blow it. You know, So I think Tennessee just makes it so difficult. And I do think we'll learn a lot about Arkansas, and I think we'll learn a lot about Tennessee this weekend too, and about what they might look like going into the heart of their SEC schedule.
You can read more of Christina's head-to-head on our website right now. If you'll go to the top of the page, you'll see a drop-down for Hogs Illustrated. Just click there, and if you're a subscriber, you can read. If you're not a subscriber, we'll tell you how you can do that. You can subscribe right now for $17 a month, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509. It gives you the most complete coverage in one location. 20-plus issues to Hogs Illustrated Magazine gives you complete access our website at wholehogsports.com. And out now is our Razorback basketball preview. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina, will you hold up that magazine, please?
This beautiful magazine.
Blake will zoom in on you. You can see this new Hogs Illustrated magazine. It's the basketball preview. We've been talking about this for a while, and we're excited to get that in. It just came into the office this morning, actually. Tell us about this magazine.
Yeah, I mean, the basketball preview has been something we've been talking about since basically July, you know, in terms of what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I was one of the things that I feel like just describes covering this particular team and also just kind of college basketball and college sports now is you might notice on the cover a lot of these guys are in practice jerseys because mm-hmm. I didn't want to use their old team jerseys. I didn't want a bunch of guys in Kentucky uniforms on.
You got
here.
A lot of flack whenever they had a blue light behind
John Calipari. So I was like, well, all right, I'm not going to. And I know, you know, we pushed these out pretty quick, and I know we didn't have time to do kind of a, you know, the jersey swap Photoshop edit. So I got some practice photos. The University of Arkansas Athletic Department sent us a few photos that we were able to use on the cover. So the only guy that's in his Razorback uniform is Trevin Brazil.
Yep.
They're a lone returner. But so it's funny that it's also different now, and the women's team is the same way. I mean, the women's team mm-hmm. has so many new players, and so in this issue we have roster breakdowns of both teams, kind of what to expect from all those players, you know, where they're coming from, what they might, how they we expect them to be used this season, and then we've also got the full schedules for both teams and breakdowns of, we did kind of the top five non-conference games and top five conference games, so some of the biggest games to kind of circle on your calendar, games with a lot of potential to be interesting or to have some cool storylines going in. And then we've got some a couple of features on some interesting, you know, some notable players. So John L. Davis for the men's team, the FAU transfer, just he's got a really interesting backstory that Anthony Christensen, our basketball writer, was able to talk to some people about, you know, coming from FAU, leading them to that unlikely Final Four run.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the women's side, we have Izzy Higginbottom, the Arkansas State transfer, who was one of the top 10 scorers in the country last season. And you know, she went in the transfer portal and she was kind of waiting on Arkansas to call. She's from Batesville, and she's the player that Mike Nabors kind of wants to build this team around. So we've also got a Q&A with Mike Nabors where he talks pretty honestly about his team and is looking ahead to what they have coming up. They lost a ton of talent and they have had to get a totally new overhauled roster. So
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of interesting basketball stuff in here. You know, there's going to be more over the coming month with the men's team has that big exhibition against Kansas coming up. But I can't believe it's already time to be talking about basketball. It feels like football season's been going on for so long, but also like it's flying by at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're really excited about the basketball preview. I think this is going to be a fun, really fun season to cover. It's full of anticipation for sure.
56 pages, almost all basketball in there. A little bit different than what we have done in the past with our basketball preview. This is much more like what we do with our football and baseball previews, which are always, you know, a couple of our – they're our two biggest issues every year. Put a lot more emphasis on a singular basketball issue this year, so hope you'll check that out. Again, if you missed it a second ago, Hogs Illustrated, you can go to hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call our office here at 479-684-5509, 479-684-5509. John Calipari spoke to reporters yesterday. You know, a couple of the things, he really went over everything, Christine. I know you listened to this. It was like, what, 46 minutes?
46 minutes. It's funny. We were talking about, you know, long-winded or short-winded coaches earlier, and mm-hmm. I was thinking during this press conference, I was like, this is like what Dabo does. When I covered Clemson last season, Dabo, you'll wait on him for hour 15 minutes post game, and then he will talk for 50 minutes. And so I was like, man, this is just like covering demo.
One of the things that I was really interested to listen to him talk about was why he wanted to hire Kenny Payne. Kenny Payne obviously was a key run in all of Kentucky's success when Calipari was there. When Payne was on the Kentucky staff, that's when they were rolling every year. They won a national championship. They seemed like they went to the Final Four about every year or every other year. And then Payne leaves, and Kentucky's success drops off. Spent the last couple of years at Louisville. Didn't go well for him. Now he's back with Calipari here at Arkansas. This was John Calipari talking about why he wanted to bring Kenny Payne back onto his staff.
Kenny and I really worked together well, but I've done that with other staff members too. But I looked at Kenny and I said, what I want you to remember, you're Kenny I used an adjective, pain. Don't you forget that. And I want you to come here and be that same guy. I want you to be who you are. I want you to challenge the kids. I want you to be involved in what we're doing, talking to me offensively and defensively. And he gives me an experienced guy that I already know how we work together. So when you ask what was the importance, if I had to walk in with a whole new staff, you ready? A whole new team, you ready? And no schedule. At least I got the staff, we know each other, we know what we want to do. And then I bring in Kenny, who we've been together. So, it was important for me, and I think important for the kids. I want guys on this staff that add value to young people. They don't need to tell me what I want to hear. I've done this enough. Do you add value? Do you help them get better? Do you tell them the truth? Are you trying to just be their friend? Will you keep it? Will they respect you because you're keeping it real? You're telling them what they need to hear. And hopefully we got a staff full of guys, and I believe we do, that will be that way.
That's John Calipari talking about Kenny Payne and his staff. He seems really comfortable with his staff. I mean, you look at the people on here. Kenny Payne, obviously been with him for a while before. Chin Coleman the same way. Chuck Martin the same way. His son, Brad Calipari. They just announced here in the last week that Tyler Ulis will be an assistant for the Razorbacks. Played for Calipari at Kentucky. I think spent maybe the last year or two there as, you know, a support staff, maybe graduate assistant type role. He surrounded himself with people that he really trusts.
Yeah, and I think it makes a lot of sense what he was saying about he's walking into this totally new situation. I mean, he's repeatedly made the joke about there is no team. You know, he doesn't have a roster. The schedule has kind of been coming along in dribs and drabs, and finally we have more of a full picture. But I think having that familiarity with that staff, you'd have to have, for anybody, whether it's John Calipari or whoever, you have to have some level of familiarity. Some people that you know kind of share your vision for what your team's going to be so that they can help you get all that established as quickly as possible.
I was thinking about Pittman as I was listening to this. You know, Pittman's taken, you know, and when you're not winning, you get criticized, and I get that. But he's taken a lot of criticism because of some of the things that Juracek has said about how Pittman needs to have a former head coach on his staff, you know, somebody that he can bounce ideas off of, and they say, well, you know, that's a crutch. It's not a crutch. Nick Saban did that. I mean, look at all the former head coaches that he had on his staff, not just in the, you know, the rehab role that they would come in and do, but I mean, he had he had a lot of former head coaches, whether it be Bill O'Brien as an offensive coordinator, and the list just goes on and on, the number of assistant coaches who were either coordinators or position coaches on Saban's staff. And most of the really successful head coaches want to surround themselves with people who have been in that chair, who understand what they're going through, because it's nice to be able to go close the door and say, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. Have you ever been in a situation like that where, you know, you can give me some advice? I mean, I think coaches really want that. And so you heard him talking about that with Kenny Payne. Pittman had it with Barry Odom for a couple of years here. They thought they were going to get that with Dan Enos last year. It just did not work out. And now they've got it with Petrino. It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Nick Saban. He also gets credit for being very adaptable. Like, whenever the tide of football is turning, he adapts to it. He adjusts to it instead of staying stuck in whatever he was doing. And I think some of those, getting that mix of different people that have come from all over, was helpful to him in that. But getting back to Calipari and basketball, I mean, Calipari does not strike me as someone who needs a head coach in the room for that necessarily. Like, he is the head coach you want in the room, and he is somebody who, you know, Kenny Payne is going to kind of be part of his tree. He's talked about how he thinks Chin Coleman is somebody who will, you know, can and should be a college head coach one day, you know, something, things like that. Like, he is a guy that is teaching people, but he's also somebody that's kind of got these, he knows who he needs and he knows who he trusts, and that's who he's brought here.
But he likes having the experience of a guy that's been a head coach
for sure.
I mean, you heard him talking about that. He also had some comments about the roster and roster construction, and this is something I heard him about. I took my son to the Calipari father-son camp back on Father's Day weekend in June, and this was something he was even talking about at that point, about the age range that you have in college basketball. Now, he made kind of a humorous remark about it at the start yesterday and then kind of transitioned to talking about recruiting older players.
Right now, I know you have trouble when kids were playing against the team, and the guy's waving to his two kids in the stands. You're saying, this got a little old now. What are we doing here? So to say you're going to do it with 18 and 19-year-olds against 24 and 25-year-olds, you got to make that adjustment. We have three freshmen on the team, really four, but those three, and we have some older players. Let's see.
So he's changing how he puts this. The one-and-done thing, they may be one-and-done here, but it's going to be one-and-done in a different way. It's not going to be necessarily one-and-done, you know, to the NBA as a 19, 20-year-old. It's he's changing the way that he recruits players.
Right, which is something he got a lot of criticism for at Kentucky in those later years, was still kind of being in that one-and-done sort of mindset when the direction college basketball has gone and the way that teams have had more success is by having older, more experienced guys. Plus, you know, it never hurts you to have NBA talent and things like that, but having guys who are experienced, having guys who have been there, I always think about, like, Trey Wade on the Eric Musselman teams, like, just how impactful Trey Wade was down the stretch of that tournament run. And something Eric Musselman, I think, talked about on, I can't remember whose podcast recently, somebody asked him, you know, about some standout guys from his Arkansas time, and he shouted out Trey Wade as somebody who just really, you know, was not flashy but would get it done. And so you need guys like that. You need older guys. Certainly, like I said, it doesn't hurt to have a guy who can go one and done, but to build your team around that, I think we're seeing that tide kind of turn in college basketball.
Did you see what they're doing to the floor over at Bud Walton Arena?
I didn't. I saw they tweeted about it today.
We got a video right here that this came from the Razorback basketball Twitter account. They're taking everything off the floor. It looks like they're about to put something new on there.
Oh, boy. What do you think it's going
to
be?
Well, that's what everybody wants to know is what's this going
to
be.
Does everybody want it to be the Slobbering Hog?
I think a lot of people do. I have my doubts whether or not that's going to happen, but we'll see. Now I'm interested. I want to know what they're – I always hate it when people tease stuff because you never know when they're going to come back and give
you the
answer. I don't
know. Yeah, it could be when we go to the first game at Bud Walton. We don't know.
If it was me, I would tease this, and then I would come back with an answer in 3 hours because I don't like being teased. They'll probably wait like a week or two. Or
yeah,
heck, we may not even see
know.
It before they play Kansas.
People are going to be so mad if it's not the Slobbering Hog, though. If they tease it and then it's not the Slobbering Hog, it's going to be such a letdown. The people that want that anyway. Obviously.
We'll see. That's gotten my interest piqued about what are they going to put on the floor over at Bud Walton Arena. Tell you a few other things here. Arkansas has announced that it will have a baseball exhibition next Friday and Saturday over at Baumwalker Stadium against Oklahoma State. Dave Van Horn talked about this on our podcast probably close to 2 months ago that this was in the works. It's taken a little while to get all the details set. But they're going to play on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m., and then Saturday, October 12th at noon. Both of these games are going to be open to the public, free of charge. You don't have to pay to come in. It's going to just, you know, come in, sit wherever you want to. I think they do have some limitations about premium seating areas. I don't know that you can access all of those. But the Razorbacks and the Cowboys, we had Peter Flaherty on our podcast not too long ago, and I asked him who were the – he's from Baseball America – and I ask him, who are the teams that maybe are not on the radar right now that could be national championship contenders? And Oklahoma State was one that he gave me. Obviously, Arkansas is probably going to be a top 10 team going into next season. Both of these teams seem to do pretty well in the transfer portal. According to Baseball America, Arkansas ranked second in transfers this year. Oklahoma State ranked ninth in transfers this year. One of their transfers is a former Razorback, Jason Jones, the outfielder, infielder. And so this is interesting. Arkansas and Oklahoma State, they're not going to play in the regular season next year. They do tend to see each other in the regular season quite a bit. So now they're going to play twice over at Baumwalker. This should be fun to watch.
Yeah, they've built up a little bit of a baseball rivalry over, you know, with some of their recent history and things like that. So, I mean, I think it's cool. It'll be really fun. You know, football's off. People can go in for free. I'm sure I'll probably go, whether it's for work or just to watch, just to observe. I think it'll be really fun. I mean, we've talked before about how Arkansas fans tend to pack these, you know, pack Baumwalker for games like this.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's 5,000 people there.
Yeah. I think it'll be really fun. Hopefully it's good weather too. I mean, I think this should give, you know, it's an exciting look at this baseball roster that has a lot of intriguing new pieces and some guys back that we'll be curious to see how they start to develop.
Arkansas hasn't played a lot of these outside competition games against college teams. You know, the last time they played an outside competition against another college baseball team was in October of 2019, and it was in Stillwater against Oklahoma State. It was pretty much the last event they ever had at Allie P. Reynolds. They opened O'Brate Stadium the next spring, and obviously that year got shut down. But they haven't done this a lot. They did, you know, 2020 you couldn't play these because of the pandemic restrictions. 21 they chose not to. 23 they chose not to. In 22 they did play a couple of games, but it was against the Texas Rangers Instructional League teams. And so it's just kind of interesting the fact that they're doing this again, because it's been something that they've kind of not been consistent with playing college teams.
Right, yeah, and that makes it kind of an interesting novelty. I'll be curious in coming years what they do, if they kind of alternate like they have, if they make this an annual thing, not necessarily with Oklahoma State, but playing these college teams every year. I'll be curious kind of what they do. Is there something in particular you're going to be watching for when you watch these?
I want to see how the pitchers do against the Oklahoma State lineup, because Oklahoma State, they've got some really good hitters back. I think they're always a team under Josh Holliday that can hit really well. They've got Nolan Schubert back. He's an All-American. And I think they've got five position players back who started at least 37 games last year on a team that could, you know, really slug it. I think they were 19-9 in the Big 12. Oklahoma State won the conference by three or four games. Or Oklahoma won the conference by three or four games. Oklahoma State was second ahead of Texas. But they're a team that can always swing it. So Arkansas, they like the pitching. But, you know, pitching, and we're going to have Matt Hobbs on our podcast tomorrow, by the way, and we're going to talk to him about this. But in the fall, you know, you kind of get to know each other's tendencies a little bit. And so I think it's going to be nice to go and see, how do you pitch against someone who doesn't know your tendencies? That's what I want to see the most.
Yeah, I think we'll learn a lot from these early games. And then, I'll be curious once we start getting – it's February and stuff. It's going to be here before we know it.
I was thinking about this the other day, because it seems to me like from July 1st to October 1st, just – goes by so fast. And then so I was sitting there thinking, it's like, okay, well, what's in 3 months? Well, that's January 1st. Well, by January 1st, I'm pretty much in baseball mode already, because, you know, by the end of January, we're shivering out at the ballpark every afternoon watching their, you know, their preseason scrimmages, and it comes very fast. Baseball season will be here before you know it. Arkansas and Oklahoma State, as we said, will play Friday and Saturday of next weekend. That's the open weekend for Razorback football. And it's going to be 6 p.m. on Friday, noon on Saturday. Both games open free of charge to the public. One other note here real quick. Arkansas golf, the women's golf team, is in first place over at the Blessings Invitational, and that'll conclude this afternoon on the Golf Channel. You can watch that from 3:30 to 6:30 on the Golf Channel. See if the Razorback women can close out their championship on their home course. The men, not doing so well this week. I think they're in seventh place going into the final round. All right, when we come back, Jimmy Hyams is going to join us. Jimmy, longtime Tennessee radio personality, former sports writer there as well. Very, very respected in the state of Tennessee. We'll get his thoughts on this Arkansas-Tennessee matchup. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Jimmy Hyams. He is a Tennessee media legend, has covered the Volunteers for many, many years, and we're excited to talk with him about this game this weekend. Jimmy, thanks for being with us today.
Man, thanks for having me.
Hey, what's the feeling over in Knoxville right now about this game this weekend and about this Tennessee team in general?
The feeling in Knoxville is one of euphoria. The Tennessee fans are very excited about this team. This is the best defense that Josh Heupel has had at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And they played terrific against Oklahoma. They rank among the national leaders in several categories. And you couple that with an offense that was explosive the first three games. They played it close to the vest against Oklahoma, in part because they had a couple of sack fumbles of their quarterback and two offensive tackles were hurt. But the Tennessee fans think this is a team that's capable of competing for a national championship, certainly a college football playoff team, but one they think could do even better than that.
You know, we saw Alabama and Georgia the other night in that great game that they had. Tennessee's got to play both of them this year. I think Alabama comes to Neyland. They go to Georgia. How do you think they match up with those teams?
I think they match up pretty well with them. And it's interesting. If in the first half, I would have thought there's no way Tennessee can beat that Alabama team. But in the second half, I thought they could beat that Alabama team.
Yeah.
And in the first half against Georgia, I thought Tennessee could beat that Georgia team. But in the second half, I thought Tennessee can't beat that Georgia team,
mm-hmm.
Which underscores you never know which team's going to show up, whether it's for a half or for a game. I do think Tennessee has a puncher's chance to beat each one of them. I give them a better chance to beat Alabama at home, in part because it is in Knoxville and in part because Tennessee beat Alabama here 2 years ago. I give them less of a chance to beat Georgia in Athens just because it's so hard to beat Georgia anywhere, but in particular between the hedges. So, but I do think Tennessee has a chance against both of those teams.
And, of course, you know, this year you don't have to be perfect. I mean, you can have a slip-up or two now, and I think that's going to help a team, you know, probably going to help a lot of SEC teams, to be honest with you. Josh Heupel, how did he turn around this Tennessee program?
I think he did it several ways. Number one, he built a culture. When he got here, a lot of the players dreaded going to practice. They didn't hang around the offices with the coaches. It just was not a good atmosphere, and they weren't very good. He got here, and not only did he practice, but he said, hey, you know what? Let's go play dodgeball. Let's go play a flag football. Let's go bowling. Let's go do some team activities. And he showed the players, one, that it could be fun, but secondly, that he cared. The other thing, so besides the culture, the other thing he brought was a dynamic offense.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got hired, although a lot of people questioned it, I said the one thing he's going to be able to do here is score points. I don't care what league you're in, even if it's the SEC. When you run this offense, you're going to score points because I think this offense has an answer for anything the defense can throw at you. The one exception would be if that defense has a bunch of NFL players like Georgia. That's where you struggle because just one-on-one, they're going to whip you. But other than that, I mean, even 2 years ago against Alabama and Nick Saban, they scored 52 points. So he brought an offensive scheme that I thought would work, and so far it has. He didn't have the right quarterback a year ago. He's got the right quarterback this year. He had the right quarterback 2 years ago. And so I think those two things he brought to the table for Tennessee, and that's one reason he's been able to flip this program.
We had Houston Nutt on our show yesterday, and we were talking to him about Rhett Lashley, who was one of his former players at Arkansas. And, you know, he got let go at Auburn. Gus Malzahn was his high school head coach. That had to be a very difficult decision, you know, a very close personal friendship there between those two. But then Lashley, since then, I mean, he goes to UConn and kind of reinvents himself, and then he gets to SMU, and then he gets the SMU head coaching job, and obviously they're off to a great start. Very comparable. You see where I'm going here with Heupel and what happened at Oklahoma and Bob Stoops and getting let go there. It seems like when he got let go at Oklahoma, he goes to Missouri, goes to UCF, now at Tennessee. It's been a very upward trajectory for him over the last 9 or 10 years. How much do you think letting go kind of maybe refocused, refueled him as a coach?
Josh Heupel even acknowledged that it was a blessing in disguise because I think at Oklahoma, he was going to do it a lot of Stoops' way.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't going to be as creative on offense. He wasn't going to run as many RPOs. He wasn't going to run a lot of the formations and do a lot of the things he's done. When he got fired, I think he looked in the mirror and he said, look, I'm going to redo this offense a little bit. I'm going to tweak it. And he took it to Missouri, and he had a really good quarterback in Drew Locke, but he took it to Missouri and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
They went from a bad offense to an explosive offense. Took it to Central Florida, it worked. Took it to Tennessee, it's worked. So I think him getting fired at Oklahoma allowed him to broaden his view of the offense that he wanted to run. And now he has, I hate to say perfected it, but he's come pretty darn close to perfecting this offense. And it's just so hard to defend, not just because of the passing game, but Tennessee's a very good running team. Mm-hmm. And what they'll do, it's pretty simple. If they spread the field and you spread with them, they're going to run at you because they got the numbers. If you stack the box, they're going to throw. And it's very effective. And he's been able to have great success so far doing that.
What's been the key to Nico Iamaliava and the success that he's had early this year?
One is talent. The other thing is he came in as a five-star. And he could have said, I'm all this, I'm all that. I got this big NIL deal that pays, depending on who you believe, as much as $2 million a year. He didn't do that. He came in very humble. He came in asking questions. He came in seeking advice from people and knew that he was going to sit for a year. So I think that's a part of it, his attitude. The other thing is he's an extremely accurate passer. Mm-hmm. That's a part of it. He's a quick decision maker, which you have to have in this offense. He is a capable runner. He's not a great runner. He's certainly not Jalen Milroe, but he can run the football. And if it's 3rd and 5, he can get you 6 or 7 on a zone read for a first down. So he fits this offense, but his accuracy with his passing is pretty much uncanny. I would think that's the two strengths he's got: quick decision maker and a very accurate passer.
He's got some great backs behind him. Dylan Sampson leading the SEC in rushing touchdowns. You were talking about the defense earlier. There's just a completeness about this Tennessee team that stands out to me. You know, when they win by as much as they've been winning, because, you know, the scores really jump out at you, you know, some of these games, North Carolina State, Kent State, even, you know, if you watch the OU game, you know, it was a lot. It wasn't nearly as close as the final score made it look. When you win by so much, it's easy to really focus in on those positives. I wonder, what are the areas you think Tennessee needs to improve on after this off week?
There were two major concerns I had about Tennessee entering the season. Number one, the secondary. Number two, depth on the offensive line. The secondary's played pretty well. Now, I will say this. They have not been challenged by a really good passing team. Certainly wasn't NC State. Certainly wasn't Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But the other one, which is a bigger concern now, is depth on the offensive line. Tennessee, both of their tackles, they didn't have one tackle for the entire Oklahoma game. Lance Hurd, the LSU transfer. And then John Campbell got hurt in the second quarter against Oklahoma, and he was rendered ineffective. He came back for one more series. The backup tackles got pretty much destroyed by Oklahoma. Tennessee does not have good depth on the offensive line. That, to me, is the biggest problem that they have right now. If they stay healthy, they'll be all right. But if they don't get those tackles healthy, there'll be some teams, in particular, in pass rush situations, that could feast on Tennessee's offensive line. So that, to me, is the biggest thing. Tennessee's got to get healthy, at the tackle position.
You know, Tennessee, and you know as well as anybody, that there have been some hard times there over the last few years. I mean, there's been NCAA investigations. There's been, obviously the football program went through a lot of coaches trying to get things back on track to the level that Phil Fulmer had it. There seems to be a lot of positive things happening over in Knoxville right now. I mean, football's on a great track. Rick Barnes has got a great program built with basketball. Tony Vitello, who we know real well, just won the national championship in baseball. I wonder, just what's the feeling? What's the vibe around Knoxville right now about this athletic program? Because it seems like it's one of the top ones in the country.
This is my 40th football season of covering Tennessee. I have never seen the athletic department this good, ever, during that time frame. They've won. Most people would tell you the SEC is the toughest conference in the country in all sports. And yet Tennessee's won the all-sports trophy in the SEC 3 years in a row. That's unprecedented. They finished number 3 in the national all-sports trophy. That's the highest finish ever. I was looking at this the other day. They field 20 sports, but they only have 16 head coaches because you have a director of track who oversees men and women, right. Director of swimming oversees men and women. Of their 16 head coaches, 15 of them have been a conference coach of the year, whether that's in the SEC or the conference from which they came, for example, the women's basketball coach. There's a great vibe at Tennessee. There's a great culture. You've got football players going to baseball games, baseball players going to softball games. You got the head coach at softball going to women's basketball games. You have a great, and I think it's led by Rick Barnes, but you've got a great atmosphere, great camaraderie within the staff, within all the players. And Danny White has cultivated some of that. Not all of it, because he inherited a lot of these coaches. But he has helped along the way. And I think that's, I've never seen it this good. And you've got a united front from your president to your chancellor to your athletic director to your coaches. That's not always been the case at Tennessee.
It's good enough to get Peyton Manning back in Jersey to walk out before a concert the other night.
Yeah, he was, he's been teaching classes over here even. So, yeah, he hadn't invited me to any of his journalism classes, so I wonder why.
What's he thinking? I'd love to sit in on one of those. That would be yeah, very interesting to hear that. Hey, Sam Pittman's year over there wasn't very memorable, yeah. But what do you remember about covering him?
Really liked him. Great guy, great personality. Players loved him. Very good offensive line coach. Have a lot of respect for him. We've had a chance to interview him pretty much each year that he's been at Arkansas at the SEC spring meetings or at football media days. Mm-hmm. And I like him a lot. I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's a tremendous football coach. I think Arkansas can be a tough place to win. And I think this is a critical year for him. I think he would acknowledge that too. He needs Bobby Petrino to be really good as an offensive coordinator. And so far, I think they've been really good for the most part. But I think a lot of him, and I wish him success because I think he's just a genuine great guy.
You know, for as often as these teams played, it's hard to believe Tennessee hadn't won a game in this series, I think, in 17 years. Houston Hutt and Phil Fulmer were the head coaches. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, and let's see, Arkansas won three in a row. Against
three in
Tennessee.
A row, but they play so infrequently that it's
yeah.
You know, I think they won in 11, they won in 15, they won in 20. They haven't played a whole lot.
No, they haven't. And I'd like to see them play more. I'm glad that they got markets on the schedule because I think this has the potential to be a pretty good rivalry. And if you look at the 19 games they've played, there have been some very significant moments.
Oh, yeah.
1998, when the Arkansas had Tennessee beat and Tennessee got a fumble and won that game. Mm-hmm. The next year, Tennessee's ranked third in the country and Arkansas beats them 28-24 in Fayetteville, and that knocked Tennessee out of the national championship hunt. Mm-hmm. There was a great Cotton Bowl back in 1990 mm-hmm. season. And in 1992, Arkansas was a huge underdog, maybe 25-point underdog. Tennessee's ranked in the top five. Arkansas beat them. That was the first of a three-game losing streak that Tennessee had in 1992, mm-hmm. which led to the firing of John Majors.
Yeah.
So there have been some big moments in this series.
Yeah, if Todd Wright doesn't kick that field goal, who knows if the Phil Fulmer era even happens at Tennessee.
There was a six
overtime game. Jason Witten catches a touchdown for Tennessee. I mean, you just go on and on. It's been a great series between Arkansas and Tennessee. The Razorbacks will come back over to Knoxville next year as part of this SEC scheduling rotation, so they'll see each other this year and next year. Jimmy, we appreciate your time and your knowledge and your insights on Arkansas and Tennessee.
Man, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and best of luck to you.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, Jimmy. And we appreciate you joining us on our podcast today. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. As we mentioned, Matt Hobbs will be with us. I hope you'll join in then to hear what he has to say about this Arkansas baseball team as they prepare to play Oklahoma State on next weekend, a couple of scrimmages at Baumwalker Stadium. Of course, we'll have lots more Arkansas-Tennessee talk tomorrow as well. Until then, hope you'll join us at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.